It's Friday, September 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, Republicans make their pitch to become president. U.S. monetary officials hold steady on interest rates.
They arrested me, and they told me that I committed a crime of a hoax bomb, a fake bomb.
A science project lands a teenager in jail. Also ahead, migrants and refugees find new entry points in Europe. Country music to hand out its awards. It's all on today's International Edition. Republican presidential frontrunner and billionaire Donald Trump took center stage late Wednesday at his party's second major debate in the nomination race for the White House, facing a barrage of charges from his rivals that he's unfit to be commander-in-chief. 10 challengers joined the real estate tycoon in the heavyweight clash at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California. VOA senior political correspondent Jim Malone joins me to sort the fallout from the debate.
I think in the aftermath of this second debate, the race has taken a turn. The turn is this, that prior to that debate, Donald Trump soared above everybody else. He had built up a considerable lead in the polls, not only nationally, but in some of the key states like Iowa and New Hampshire. He was dominating the conversation. He was dominating the campaign. But I think we saw a different facet of the Trump phenomenon in that second debate. I think that the Republican field brought him back down to earth a bit. He's now back in that rugby scrum with everybody else to an extent.
And we saw one of the people who bore the brunt of his earlier attacks, Carly Fiorina, really shining in her debate answers. She really had some definite things to say.
The consensus winner, if there was one, among the pundits, let's say, the ones I've surveyed, found that Fiorina was the winner, just as she won the undercard debate the first time around. So she's had quite a meteoric rise now. Can she parlay that into a rise in the polls? We'll have to see. But she had some very strong moments during the evening, some on foreign policy, for example, how she'd deal with the Russians and Vladimir Putin, but also on domestic issues, this controversial issue of abortion and Planned Parenthood. She gave one of the strongest moments in the entire debate when she spoke to the audience on that, and they responded very strongly. And, of course, in her one-on-one moments with Donald Trump, she was also quite effective. So we have this new phenomenon, yet another political outsider. Will she eclipse Trump? It's too early to say, but I do think, in addition to Fiorina, a number of the other candidates had good enough nights that they feel they're in the mix, too. People like Marco Rubio, Chris Christie, John Kasich, and so forth, and Ted Cruz, they feel that they also had an impact. So the race remains unsettled at this point after this second debate.
Mm-hmm. Chris Christie, in particular, seemed to try to position himself as an outsider, even though he's the governor of a state, because he's a Republican in a heavily Democrat-controlled state.
And, you know, that moment you're referring to was, I think that was one of the key moments in the debate, and it was almost the revenge of the politicians. We've heard so much about political outsiders are getting all the attention, that's what the public wants. But in that mini debate between Trump and Fiorina about whose business record was better or worse, Christie finally interrupted and said, wait a minute, it's great you guys had successful careers, but what about the average Joe at home just trying to find a job, trying to get his family by on an income? It was an opportunity for Christie to punch through because he's been kind of forgotten. Marco Rubio spoke a lot about foreign policy. He got a lot of good reviews. So the race is kind of jumbled, and I think it's almost re-scrambled now with Trump not dominating the way he did the first time around.
Where do they go from here? How does the field begin to whittle down now?
There'll be a lot of attention on people like the Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, who did not have many great moments in the debate. The reviews of his performance are not great, and some people are wondering if his campaign can survive. Likewise, in the pre-debate among the four contenders we saw there, people like Rick Santorum, who actually won the Iowa caucuses back in 2012, they're going to have to take a look at how far they can go. I think some Republicans would like to see a winnowing of the field. How quickly that's going to happen remains to be seen. A lot of them will try to make it at least to the first couple of contests. But in this modern day and age of needing a lot of money just to compete, that's an open question whether some of them will be able to survive until early next year.
Well, always soaring in the VOA poll numbers, our own Jim Malone. Jim, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Jim.
We certainly want to know how you're feeling about all of this, so we're turning to social media and finding out the reaction on Wednesday's GOP debate. Our G, Abby Lee, is right here in Studio 22 to bring us the latest. G, what are the contenders saying on Twitter about their own performances?
Hi, Jim. Let's start with what Donald Trump said, because he strongly believes he's a winner of last night's debate. So it's no surprise he's tweeting so much about the debate and also retweeting his family's tweets about his performance. Jim, I don't know if you knew, but it's news to me that his sons are such staunch supporters of him running for president. Well, going back to what he's tweeted, here's an example. Every poll done on debate last night, from Drudge to Newsmax to Time magazine, had me winning in a landslide. Hashtag Make America Great Again. That's been retweeted almost 2,300 times and marked as a favorite nearly 5,000 times. As a reply to that tweet, a Twitter user wrote, "Fiorina was much better." That reply was marked as a favorite almost 60 times.
And of course, that user referring to Carly Fiorina. Mm-hmm. Did Fiorina tweet anything about how she did?
Surprisingly, no. She shared a photo and video clips from the debate, but didn't say whether she's pleased with her performance or not.
Interesting. What about Ben Carson?
I'm glad you asked. A lot of people say Carson did fairly well last night. He sent out this tweet after the event. "A leader that understands what you say is important, not how loud you scream it. We the people want hashtag CNN debate tonight, hashtag BC to DC 16. Now, that hashtag stands for Ben Carson to DC 2016, and more than 2,200 people share that tweet. He also tweeted a link to a Washington Times article titled, "The Secret to Ben Carson's Quiet Rise, Likeability."
Well, his trip to D.C. wouldn't be far, as he practiced as a neurosurgeon at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. What about the underdogs from the GOP contenders?
Well, Lindsey Graham did pretty well. He's a senator from South Carolina, and he shared two articles about his performance last night. A Washington Post article noted, "He shined Wednesday night," and a Times article wrote, "He dominated the Republican undercard debate." That's all for me today.
Well, quite a bit from you. Thank you for the analysis. G. Abby Lee with us, and you can always find her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. This is VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all, from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is VOA's International Edition. U.S. central bank officials have decided to keep interest rates unchanged at the record low rate where they've been for several years. Joining me for more from our New York bureau is Alexis Christophorus.
The Federal Reserve decided to leave interest rates unchanged due to global headwinds that could slow the economy and keep inflation subdued. But the Fed did leave the door open for a rate hike before the end of the year. In a statement, the Fed said, quote, "Recent global economic and financial developments may restrain economic activity somewhat and are likely to put further downward pressure on inflation in the near term." The Fed said that the financial market turmoil did not change its assessment that the risks to the economy were, quote, "nearly balanced." But the Fed did add a new phrase that it was monitoring developments abroad. As for market reaction, U.S. stocks initially struggled for direction before gathering steam. The vote not to raise rates was 9-1, with Richmond Fed President Jeffrey Lacker the only dissenter. It didn't come as a surprise, since Lacker has been pressing the U.S. central bank to hike rates, saying the economic improvement no longer justifies rates at emergency low levels. Now, the Fed does meet two more times this year, October 27th and 28th, and then December 15th and 16th. With no press briefing planned in October, many analysts will push their expectations of a move on rates to December. Jim?
Fed Chair Janet Yellen did mention at one point if they were to raise the rate now, it might benefit Europe more than China. How are global markets reacting to the rate being left unchanged?
Well, certainly higher interest rates would mean a stronger U.S. dollar, and that could hurt some other countries around the world, including China. Some economists believe higher rates here in the U.S. could trigger an exodus of capital from emerging markets and cause chaos in already fragile capital markets. We know that slowing growth in China has ripped across the world, hitting commodity-producing countries quite hard. We've seen the shilling has dropped 14% against the dollar this year. Zambia's kwacha, the worst-performing currency in Africa, slumping 36%. And currency jitters causing South Africa's rand to weaken 14% this year against the dollar. And lastly, the MSCI Emerging Markets Index. That's an index that captures stock markets in nations such as Brazil, China, Chile, and Egypt, is down 14% this year. So many folks in those parts of the world are breathing a sigh of relief that the Federal Reserve decided to hold off on raising interest rates, at least for now. Jim?
Well, strong across all markets. Alexis Christophorus, we thank you so much for your insight.
My pleasure.
And as you may recall, the Fed had cut rates to a record low range between 0 and 0.25% during the financial crisis. That was in a bid to support economic growth. The European Parliament has backed a plan to distribute some 120,000 refugees among European Union member countries in an effort to relieve overcrowding in EU border nations that are the first stops for migrants seeking asylum. EU lawmakers voted to approve the measure on Thursday, 372-124, with 54 abstentions. The next move is for EU interior ministers to approve the plan, provided that they can change the position of Eastern European nations that are against it. Meanwhile, Croatia says some 5,600 migrants have entered that country since Hungary sealed its border with Serbia earlier this week. Henry Ridgewell shares what he witnessed on the Serbian side of the border with Croatia Thursday.
About lunchtime today, local time, on the Croatian-Serbian border at a town called Sir on the Serbian side, the Croatian police had stopped the migrants coming over. As more and more migrants arrived at the border, the numbers started to build, and there really wasn't the facilities or the space to hold them. But there are a couple of lines of riot police. There was a lot of pressure from behind, a lot of pushing in the crowd. It was very tense, very frustrated and tired refugees and migrants. The police really not knowing what to do. And as the numbers built, the pressure grew. There were a lot of people who were taken away in ambulances in the crush of the crowd. Every time the riot police tried to remove children or people from the crowd who were being crushed, another surge of migrants and refugees tried to break through that line. And eventually, step by step, the migrants pushed the police line back until after about an hour of this crush happening, the police eventually relented and let all the migrants and refugees who had been corralled into this area through into Croatia. So the border was essentially opened. So now the situation is that there are thousands of refugees and migrants in this small Croatian border village, not knowing where to go or what to do. The local authorities also unsure of how to deal with it. Just before the crush happened, I spoke to the interior minister of Croatia, who said each vigil migrant would be dealt with, their asylum application dealt with individually in the normal way. But clearly, they've been overwhelmed with the numbers and they're going to have to rethink that plan.
Henry Ridgewell reporting. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Americans, including President Barack Obama, reacted with an outpouring of sympathy for a 14-year-old boy who was arrested at a Texas high school after a teacher mistook his scientific project, a homemade clock, for a bomb. VOA's Latika Hoek reports.
14-year-old Ahmed Mohammed has a fascination with science and technology, especially wires and circuit boards. He has even won awards for some of his science projects. But the one he created recently got him into trouble. He built a digital clock out of a pencil case, and he brought it to school to show to his science teacher.
It's just like this one.
But another teacher at the MacArthur High School in Irving, Texas, got spooked by the wiry device, thinking it might be an explosive, and called the police. So instead of being praised, the teenage science whiz was handcuffed and taken to a police station.
They arrested me, and they told me that I committed a crime of a hoax bomb, a fake bomb.
The ninth grader is of Sudanese descent and Muslim. His parents and other members of the local Muslim community say he was singled out because of his race and religion.
I think this wouldn't even be a question if his name wasn't Ahmed Mohammed.
But local school authorities say that in the wake of mass killings at schools across the country, they have to take every potential threat seriously.
I want all of our families and the community and the entire nation to know that our student safety is our utmost priority in Irving.
Ahmed's science project gone awry has sparked nationwide sympathy for the boy. President Obama invited him to join other young scientists at a White House science event next month.
We at the White House and the president himself recognized that there could be an opportunity to try to reach out to this young man and give him a unique opportunity to nurture that intellectual curiosity. I think he's going to fit in quite well with the other young people who'll be at the White House on astronomy night.
President Obama has been encouraging students to engage in scientific invention and has hosted similar events for school children before. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
And we invite you to stop by our website at voanews.com to see video that goes with this story. The nominees for the CMA Awards have been announced. VOA's Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong chats with International Edition's Sarah Williams about them.
Well, last week, the Country Music Association has announced their annual awards. And I know, Nikki, you are the country music authority here, particularly compared to me. Let's go over some of these categories and get some of your predictions. Okay, first up, Entertainer of the Year.
Okay, so Entertainer of the Year, you have Garth Brooks, Luke Bryan, Kenny Chesney, Eric Church, Miranda Lambert. Now, these are all great artists, but I think Garth Brooks is going to win. Now, he took 10 years off. Over 10 years off to take care of his family. And then he returned with a worldwide tour. He's been selling out venues. He's been adding new dates. And he wound up being the highest paid country artist on the Forbes list of top paying celebrities. So I think that speaks to his staying power. So I think he may actually walk away with that award.
Wow, we'll have to see. Okay. And now what about Album of the Year?
Okay, so Album of the Year, you have Jason Aldean, Old Boots, New Dirt, Pageant Material, Kacey Musgraves, Painkiller by Little Big Town, The Big Revival by Kenny Chesney, and Traveler by Chris Stapleton. Now, a lot of people, Chris Stapleton has really gotten a lot of respect. He doesn't have the commercial weight as some of these others, but many people believe that his album is truly the best album of the year. However, Little Big Town had a humongous crossover hit with Girl Crush, and so if the commercial factor really winds up tipping it, it'll go to Little Big Town.
Okay, Female Vocalist of the Year.
Okay, this is hard. Now, first of all, Reba McEntire should have been nominated in this category. She was snubbed out of all the awards, which concerns me. But she was snubbed. Now, this is a hard one for me. The other ladies in the category are Miranda Lambert, Kacey Musgraves, Carrie Underwood, Leanne Womack, and Kelsey Ballerini. I think it's going to be between Miranda Lambert and Carrie Underwood. Carrie Underwood is like the it
girl right now. And so I think she may actually have it, even though I would love it if Leanne Womack got it. But that's just me. We'll see.
Okay. And what about the male vocalist?
Male vocalist. I think this is even harder. You have Dierks Bentley, Luke Bryan, Eric Church, Blake Shelton, Chris Stapleton. These are all great guys. But I think Luke Bryan has been on fire this year. He's had multiple songs on the charts at once. He had an exhibit at the Country Music Hall of Fame and Museum, which I think is pretty hot and speaks to his popularity and his legacy. And I think that commercial success will translate into Male Vocalist of the Year.
Okay, and last but not least, New Artist of the Year.
Okay, now Chris Stapleton has potential here because his talent really warrants recognition beyond just a nomination. But I think Sam Hunt has taken the country by storm. His songs have hit number one. They have stayed there on the charts. I remember Take Your Time and his current number one hit, House Party. They were in the top five for a while on the Hot Country Singles chart. So I think his sound is very indicative of contemporary country music and the direction that it's going.
That's Nikki Strong. She's the host of Country Hits USA. You can tweet Nikki at @VOA_music and also look her up on Facebook at VOA Music. We'll have a house party. We don't need nobody. Turn your TV off. Break that boombox out. We'll wake up all the night.
You've been listening to International Edition, and while nominations are always nice, I think we should give an award to director Tracy Carter and our engineer Zeynep Abdel-Rahman. Thanks for a wonderful job today. You can always find us at voanews.com, and we give the biggest award to you, our audience. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Enjoy the day. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Russia is expanding its military support for the regime of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, whom it has supported throughout a brutal conflict that has taken the lives of over 250,000 people. Secretary of State John Kerry called Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov on September 15th, expressing the United States' concern that a Russian military buildup in Syria could further escalate the conflict, lead to a greater loss of innocent life, increase refugee flows, and risk confrontation with the anti-ISIL coalition operating in Syria. Russia claims its military support for Assad is aimed at defeating terrorists like ISIL. President Barack Obama said September 11th that Russia and the United States' common view of the ISIL threat creates a potentially converging interest. But, said President Obama, the bad news is that Russia continues to believe that Assad is somebody that is worthy of continuing support.
It has been my view and the view of the United States government that as long as Assad is there, he has alienated so much of the Syrian population that it will not be possible to arrive at a peaceful ceasefire and political settlement. And you'll continue to have this vacuum that's filled by extremists.
President Obama said, "You can't continue to double down on a strategy that's doomed to failure." If, however, the Russians are willing to work with us and the 60-nation coalition we've put together, then there's the possibility of a political settlement in which Assad would be transitioned out, and a new coalition of moderate, secular, and inclusive forces could come together and restore order in the country. That, said President Obama, is our goal.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.